You remember that story several days ago about a guy who basically jumped into the water and he got eaten to death by an alligator in Orange, Texas. Well, that alligator has now been killed by a Texas man who calls himself Bear. And basically, he said he had to go. That is what happens when you kill someone. Creatures, strange creatures. Up next, Scott Marlowe joins us. We're going to talk about cryptid creatures of Florida and more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. It's been a while, but Scott Marlowe is back. He's been working in the cryptids field for more than 30 years, collecting, analyzing accounts of strange animal encounters, legends, of course. Back in 2004, he approached the Florida Keys Community College with a curriculum for cryptozoology, and they said, you know what, we love that. He's written a number of books, including Cryptid Creatures of Florida. Scotty, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while, George.
Oh, it sure has. That story of that guy who jumped in that lake, got eaten by an alligator, and now the alligator got it by some guy named Bear, that's an unbelievable story, Scott.
Well, we have that happen every now and then. It's the first time, I think, in 200 years it's happened in Texas. But, you know, we have gator attacks down here, particularly during mating season in Florida. I think we had one about 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, they don't always kill the people, but, you know, this guy was unlucky enough that, well, you know, he invaded the croc's territory or the gator's territory. And, you know, when you're in somebody else's house, you obey their rules.
Now, that's true. Now, what about all these shark attacks we hear so much about lately, too, Scott? I mean, is something going on with the animals? Are they picking up something that we might not be aware of?
Well, I personally think that animals are a great deal smarter than people give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, although I know that there's no scientific basis for this, I kind of think when you take into account things like the elephant attacks that have been going on, you know, the gator attack you just
mentioned, right,
all these shark attacks.
Chimpanzee attacks, too, over the last few years.
You know, I'm starting to think that the animals are beginning to resent us and the things we're doing to the planet, and they're well aware of what we're doing.
Interesting take. Now, when we talk about cryptids, what does that mean? What is indeed a cryptid?
A cryptid would be any animal or creature that is legendary but has not yet been confirmed and scientifically described.
Okay, and there could be many.
Oh, yeah. Well, we find about 300 new creatures per year by science, and, you know, they are technically cryptids until they are described, at which point they become part of the zoology record and not the cryptozoology record.
300 new creatures. Are they all tiny little things, or are they pretty good size?
Sometimes they're small, but occasionally we do find animals that are quite a bit larger than, you know, say, a medium-sized dog. On occasion, we find something that would be as big as a gorilla or, you know, even a giraffe, if you go back far enough for the okapi, for example, which nobody believed existed for many, many years until it was, you know, discovered that this thing that looks something like a cross between a giraffe, a zebra, and a horse actually did exist.
Scott, how could these creatures go so long without being discovered?
Well, many, many years ago, that was not so difficult. But in today's world, where you can, you know, zoom in on a matchbook cover sitting on somebody's back porch from space, it's a lot more difficult. But that doesn't mean that it's impossible. You know, even for you to be able to do what I just described, you've got to have an idea of where that thing is to be able to zoom in on the coordinates. So, you know, these animals are, you know, well, I keep seeing on Facebook all the time, for example, with Bigfoot, the, you know, the reigning hide-and-seek champion of the world. Well, that's probably true, assuming that the animal does exist.
Don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. Do you?
No, not in the least. You know, running around with somebody that, you know, he can see, because they're definitely observers from the reports that we get. We're running around with fire sticks that can kill at a half a mile.
Jeez.
I don't think they want to mess with us too much.
No, not at all. We're going to get into all kinds of creatures here, Scott, with you throughout the night tonight. Do you think we will ever find a true dinosaur from the past?
No.
All gone. Not even Nessie?
Well, those things, well, first of all, let me back up what I'm saying.
You've got a plesiosaur on your cover here.
Yeah, well, I know, but what I'm saying is it's not that they might not exist. It's that as they existed millions of years ago, we will not find the exact same thing because, as science is going to tell you, the genetics science, about every million years or so, enough mutation builds up that an animal becomes a new species. So even something that existed back when the dinosaurs were around, like the coelacanth, which has been discovered, 1937, I think it was, or 1927, off the coast of Africa, and has been reconfirmed over and over and over again, is still existing. It is not exactly the same animal as it was 75 million years ago.
Well, that's a good point. Now, what kind of work are you doing with the Florida Key Community College these days?
Well, I'm not really doing much with the Keys College anymore. I'm working primarily now with my backyard with Hillsborough Community College.
All right, tell me.
And yeah, we're, well, right now my son and I, who my son's also a teacher, and I are teaching summer camps for kids in both fossils and monsters. Paleontology and cryptozoology.
Great mix, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're having a wonderful time, and so are the kids. It has been a major blast. And surprisingly, we're dealing with first graders up through sixth graders in the summer camps. And the kids are really into it. I mean, it amazes me how absolutely intelligent they are and how much reading and studying that they've done on their own before they even get to the camp, because the questions that we get are the kinds of questions I get in my college class.
The internet has helped them a lot, hasn't it?
Oh, it certainly has. The internet has made everything available. Of course, not everything you find on the internet is accurate.
No.
But it's good that they're analyzing and thinking and using their brain to say, hey, this doesn't make sense. And then, they ask people who know, and, we get to straighten them out a little bit. But it's a wonderful thing to see. And the kids just getting into it, to the degree that they get into it with these camps we're doing, is just unbelievable.
Well, with Scott Marlowe, we're talking about cryptids, one of his books, The Cryptid Creatures of Florida, second edition, revised. I would guess, Scott, you could come out with a third edition and a fourth edition because, as you said, more and more creatures get discovered.
Well, when I first did the book, there were 21 creatures I could really well document, and then I added two more in the second edition that I had looked into. And of course, when something new comes up, I can always add another. But 23 cryptids in a single state that we've got really good documentary evidence on is pretty weird. I mean, some countries don't have that many.
No, not at all. I'm going to toss some cryptid names at you. You tell me about these creatures and what you think. Let's start with the good old chupacabra. What's going on there?
Well, the chupacabra seems to exist, and there have been some examples found. What it keeps turning up over and over and over again is something that is obviously a canid or a canid derivative. And it's either something that is newly evolving, or it's a hybrid of several different creatures. Of course, I get calls all the time, and it usually turns out to be a mutt with mange. But that isn't always the case. I mean, Phyllis Canyon, talking about Texas, had a really odd one show up on her property and had the carcass for some time. And this kind of thing happens quite a bit. But some of the stories, it sounds more like a gargoyle than a canid. But most of the ones that they captured on film are definitely some sort of a dog, a wolf, anything in that particular group of animals.
Is it a mutant, do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it is. The cases that are really a, quote, chupacabra, unquote, I definitely think it's some sort of a mutation.
Some of the pictures we've seen of strange-looking hairless dogs in Texas, might they be the chupacabra that we're talking about, or is that something else?
Some of them may be. Others may simply be a dog or a wolf or a fox or whatever with mange. And, of course, that causes them to lose their hair, that particular disease. And they can look pretty strange. I mean, I don't know how many people have seen a hairless cat, but but
they do look
they
weird.
Look really weird without.
They do
without
look weird.
Fur. Yeah.
Small and bony and everything else.
Well, and I've got my two haired cats, here in the hotel room with me, and they're rubbing up against me right now, doing their usual thing when I'm working. This is my furry family, so you know, we're familiar with dogs and cats. My son, worked at a feline rescue facility that was for wild animals, not domesticated animals, and has had some interesting experiences, particularly with one that I'm sure you're going to bring up, the Carabel cat.
Yes.
That many people thought was a Jaguarundi. And through my son's work with actual real Jaguarundis, which are defined animals, we were able to determine that it was not an escaped exotic that people were seeing, and it was indeed a cryptid cat of some kind.
And how big are they, the Carabel cat?
Well, the one on film that Larry Miller did, several people have said it's a house cat, but we've done some measuring from where Larry was in his tree stand, and there is no way that the animal was that small. It was the size of, at least of a small Florida panther. And, of course, that's a Puma concolor.
Jeez.
But the Florida panthers are a bit smaller than the mountain lions that you see out west, and even though it's the same species.
Are they aggressive, Scott? I mean, will they attack people?
Well, we haven't had any reports of them doing that yet, but, of course, a panther will attack. They're pretty much ambush predators, so if you've got your back to an area and they can sneak up on you, they're going to do it. Especially if they're hungry. But for the most part, panthers avoid people if they see them in their territory or their area. That's why it's pretty rare to actually come across one in the wild here in Florida, although once in a while we do.
What's the Wampus cat? Is that similar?
It's probably a variation of the panther that moves so quickly they think it has six legs instead of four. And I've seen some really interesting evidence of reported sightings where a small outbuilding has been clawed, like it was attacked by metal claws. That must be some sort of a feline based on what I'm seeing or what I've seen. And it's an interesting thing, but it's also supposed to be a mascot for several teams throughout the South.
Huh.
So it's an interesting legend. The Indian legend is that it was a female that had followed a female Native American who had followed improperly a group of males to a men's only kind of night out.
Yeah.
And was then cursed to roam the earth as a clawed feline.
Do we get many reports of sightings of these creatures?
Not as many on the Wampus cat as we do, other types of felines. I mean, I'm getting Black Florida Panther reports constantly, and I myself have actually seen it twice, so I know it exists. I don't care what any of the biologists say. Uh-huh. I know that there is a melanistic phase for the Puma concolor.
Now, are we talking about one or maybe a whole family of them?
Oh, many. Many. But what I think is happening with that particular animal is habitat encroachment has become so severe down here that, in the grassland savannas of the extreme south of the Everglades, where the Florida panther was well known and established, the golden coloration of the panther was really good camouflage. But when you get up to the northern part of the state where the animals are now turning up, and I know I've seen one up there, actually, on the border between Florida and Alabama. I was sitting outside having a mint julep on the veranda with a friend of mine, and one actually walked across the vacant lot, right next to the house, and dove into the bayou. So, I mean, I know they're there. In any event, when you get into those dark cypress swamps where you don't have the grassland, the base of the trees is extremely dark. So the gold coloration stands out like a sore thumb, whereas the black melanistic phase would not. So I think there's pressure there for an evolution of the animal for nature to give them the kind of camouflage that they need. And of course, when panthers are first born, they have black and golden spots. So the black coloration is there in their genes somewhere. It just
Good
hasn't
point.
Switched
yeah.
on. So this may be what's going on with these Black Panther reports.
What is the creature Pinky?
Pinky? Pinky is
Tell me about
one
Pinky.
Of Florida's versions. We have several. One of Florida's versions of the Loch Ness Monster. And Pinky is sighted fairly frequently near Sanford, Florida, by the St. John's River and in parts of it. And I suspect that what we're seeing there is either some sort of freshwater dolphin or manatees that are being mistaken for a plesiosaur-type animal.
Would be exciting. How come we can never find these creatures, Scott? They're just
well,
people see
do.
Them. Do we get them at all physically?
Sometimes we do. There was a report. I don't know if you caught one of the episodes of Monster Quest that I did, where there was a sea monster, quote unquote, in Lake Worth near Palm Beach, Florida. And we were shown some very good video footage, Dr. Patuk and I, who's one of our Pangea fellows. And, he and I immediately, after hours and hours and hours of video, filtered in on a couple of frames where we knew that we were looking at a pinniped, a seal. But the rest of the animal didn't make sense based on what was surfacing and how the animal was behaving and a trident tail and all of that. And it all turned out that what you had going on was a carnivore, which is the seal, traveling with manatees, which are herbivores, and because they don't compete for the same food stuff, they were, cohabitating, if you will. And you were seeing part of the manatee in the back, which would have been damaged by a propeller with a trident tail on a boat, along with the seal surfacing in the front, and the colorations were so close together in their appearance that people were mistaking two animals for one.
The Pensacola sea monster, is that Pinky or is that something else?
No, that's not Pinky. That is definitely something else.
Uh-huh.
And from the descriptions that the gentleman gave of the animal, it would be an elasmosaur, which would be the North American relation of a plesiosaur, which you would have found in, like, Loch Ness.
Wow. See, that's exciting.
That's back in 63, so a long time ago. But there have been other reports of similar things since. Even down in the Keys, some construction workers saw an animal similar to that surface and hang around while they were doing some work on some buildings down there near Marathon. So we get those reports from time to time. I've been diving with several of my boys, and we've never had anything like that come up on us. The closest I've ever come was when I was a teenager. Deep sea fishing, and we had a shark that was just way too big to have been anything that would have been a known type of shark, as we were in a 45-foot boat, and the shark was longer than the boat.
Scott, how do you equate myths with real creatures? Are they one and the same, or what do you think?
Well, sometimes they are. I mean, there's always a basis in fact for every legend, and it may be that it's greatly over-exaggerated. But, in the retelling of stories and legends and what have you, particularly in oral histories, it's like playing telephone when you're in high school. You start a rumor going down the line from one end of the class, and by the time you get to the other class, the story doesn't bear any resemblance whatsoever to what you started with. Because people embellish and they add things, and that's one of the problems with forensic interviewing. You don't know whether people, if you're not phrasing your questions correctly and letting them go. I've had this problem with Bigfoot sightings and swamp ape sightings like Jennifer Ward's.
Hold on for a second, Scott. We'll come back. We'll talk more about these cryptid creatures of Florida next. Hey, have you had a chance yet to watch our television show, Beyond Belief? Go ahead. Go to this website, beyondbelief.com. It's simple as that. Look at all the past programs. We've got some great ones there. Take a look at the one with Dr. Bruce Goldberg, by the way, on hypnotherapy. Again, beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Scott Marlowe. We're talking about his work, Cryptid, Creatures of Florida. We'll take calls with you next hour as well. Let's go back to some of these creatures again, if we can. And it's amazing when we were talking about myth versus reality, it crosses over, Scott, doesn't it?
Well, it does. You know, like I said, part of the problem is people don't ask the correct questions or don't phrase it in the right way, and people respond to them, or the eyewitnesses respond to them in ways that they think they want them to respond. So you don't always get consistent stories that way, and that just kind of adds to the confusion. So, you know, I've dealt with some large organizations that put investigators out in the field, but their investigators, in the process of asking questions about cryptid sightings, tell the people what they want to hear, and that's what they get back, instead of what really happened.
The Florida skunk ape, out in the wild, how prevalent is this creature?
Well, the reports come in constantly. You know, they're seen just about everywhere in Florida, and in some cases in people's backyard, which is interesting. Of course, you know, if you have worked with enough people who have had eyewitness or claim eyewitness sightings, you realize that some of the reports are by people who have questionable motives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good point.
And then others, you realize that, you know, they have, shall we say, certain disorders that cause them to see things. And then others still are absolutely genuine and are seeing something. Exactly what it is, we may not know, but you know, they have definitely been reporting things in a factual way. So, you know, it's anybody's guess what we're really looking at. Although, if you've, you know, read my book, Bigfoot Enigma, you know my heresy. I don't necessarily believe that, quote, Bigfoot is the same animal around the world. I think there's several different varieties.
Well, with the skunk ape, has it ever been discovered in terms of captured? Is it in a zoo somewhere?
No, but there are reports where that has happened. One of the most famous, of course, would be Zaina back at the turn of the 18th or 19th to 20th century in the Republic of Georgia. And there have been equivocal accounts, you know, finding skeletal remains that were supposedly hers and her son's, yada, 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 that were human, but other people contest that, and I'm not sure. So, and there have been other stories of similar captures during World War II, and more recently, and the Chinese have their own stories. It's hard to say, but there's not one stuffed and mounted in a zoo or a museum anywhere, and there's not one in a zoo, so it's still a legendary cryptid creature.
Scott, what would the skunk ape look like? Can you describe it?
Well, depending on, you know, whose, you know, stories you go with, and I tend to lean towards Jennifer Ward's description, the animal is somewhat chimp-like, but not entirely, somewhat gorilla-like, but not entirely, and somewhat human-like, although not entirely. So I don't know whether I agree with Jeff Meldrum, that it's a relic hominin, in other words, a primitive human, or it's some kind of undiscovered ape man or ape creature.
Jeff's done some great work too, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Jeff's done some marvelous work.
So what about Hogzilla? What the heck is that?
That is a gigantic feral hog. And there have been quite a few of those reported. You know, Hogzilla is our Florida version, or Hog Kong, and there have been others. But these things are so enormous that if you were to put one in the receiving tray of a bulldozer, it would take up the entire receiving tray.
Jeez.
I mean, they're just enormous. Now, why they're growing to that size is anybody's guess, but they're definitely mega hogs.
Does it have like boar teeth? You know, the
Oh, yes,
curved
some
up
of them
tusk?
do.
It does. Wow.
Some of them do. Not all of them. Some of them do.
These things wouldn't be hard to hide. So where are they?
Well, one was discovered outside of St. Augustine, Florida, not that long ago. And the most famous one, the one that the National Geographic did the piece on, was in Georgia.
Now, with all these creatures that we've talked about to date, Scott, has anybody ever just really captured any of them?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean,
we've got dead specimens of Hogzilla and Hog Kong.
Okay.
No question. Some of the chupacabra, as I say, they've turned up dead. They're also some sort of canid from, you know, judging from the teeth, and in some cases, just not known. There have been a number of different animals that have been captured that, you know, people just don't know what to make of them.
Give me the length, you think, of Hogzilla, the height. How big do you think it is?
Well, the one that I saw that is very well documented was approximately the length of a bed.
What's that, a bed?
Almost 6 feet, yes.
Huge.
Yeah.
Things got to weigh a ton.
Yeah, well, and they've weighed more than that. So, yes, that's about right.
A lot of bacon out of that thing, huh?
Well, they would definitely offend our Arab friends.
Yes, they would. It is pork. Well, yep. Matter of fact, a lot of religions stay away from pork. But So, in those, you're convinced they exist, right?
Oh, there's no question. They've got dead specimens.
Okay, so those, they're out there. But difficult, again, to find.
Yes. I mean, it's not like they're all over the place, but they're definitely there. And, we actually have examples of them, and it's probably some kind of growth hormone that's causing them to grow the size they're growing, but
yeah.
Where they're getting it and how they're getting it is something else again. We just don't know.
Could these creatures have been made in a laboratory, Scott, and somehow they were released or they escaped?
Well, I wouldn't put it past our government, but it seems unlikely, but hey, they could do it.
Thunderbirds. Some of my favorite yep. stories surround Thunderbirds, these big, huge birds. What do we hear?
Well, they're the size of condors or bigger.
Cessnas, in some cases.
California condors. I'm talking Andean condors, which are larger. And they're just incredibly enormous, but they're not like they would not be able to, like the Disney-fied version, if you go back to the old Disney movie In Search of the Castaways, large enough to pick a person up off the ground and carry him off to the nest.
But we've had stories of that, remember? In Illinois, I think?
Oh, yeah. Marlon Lowe. Illinois, yeah.
His mother came out and swatted it with a broom and saved the kid.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard the story, but it's, you know, the dynamics, the weight ratios and what have you are such that it's just not likely that an animal that size could pick somebody up and carry them off.
What would the bird have done with the kid anyway?
Well, that depends on whether it got to the nest or not, wouldn't it?
Oh, feed the babies?
Yeah.
Oh.
That would be the likely outcome.
Wow. And I guess these things swoop down and pick up dogs, cats, whatever it can, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, that's what raptors do.
Do we get reports of pterodactyls? Prehistoric birds?
I get those frequently, too. Some of them we've been able to answer, but, others, no. Typically, it turns out to be a bird that is well known in Central America that's just off path a little bit. Some of them were a little bit more difficult. I had a couple of legal beagles from Boston call me about pterodactyls out of Palm Beach a couple of years back, and we're sitting there discussing the creature, and you hear these horrible caws in the background, and they said, "There it is, there it is, there." And I'm going, "Huh? There's what?" You know, and
yeah,
they're saying, but I can hear it. You hear that sound? That's this pterodactyl thing. And I said, well, you know, I hate to tell you, but that's a sand crane.
What's your favorite cryptid story, Scott?
Oh, I love them all. Are you kidding? There's no way I can pick one. I'm just so enamored with cryptid animals and been chasing them for so many years that they all appeal to me.
All right, of the cryptids that are out there, which is the one you'd really like to see up front?
Well, the one that I'm best known for and the one that I've done most of my work in is, of course, the swamp ape.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would love to find an undiscovered primate. I just think it would be cool. And I think it's possible that there's some kind of a primate out there that's just so smart that it is able to avoid us.
And do you think it's all over the country, or is it restricted to the Florida?
They're all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, my colleague Adam Davies has been chasing the orang pendek in Sumatra for years. You know, I've been doing the swamp ape thing here in the Gulf states for quite some time. You know, Brian Sykes has been, you know, finding bear hair instead of yeti hair in the Himalayas. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the yeti, as it's reported, as being an ape-like creature, doesn't exist. It just means that the hair that they found so far is from a bear. So, you know, it's these things are everywhere. I mean, they're, you know, if you go down under, then we got the Yowie. So it strikes me as being a bit odd that you've got these reports from all over the place, from people who don't know one another, who have absolutely nothing to gain by coming forward with these stories, that there isn't something there. And even Jane Goodall agrees with us.
Well, and you're right about something, too, that they have nothing to gain. You know, there are some people out there that try to profit from these creatures, but by and large...
Know. You and I both know. The first time I was on with you, you had that problem.
Oh, yeah. We know who that was, don't we?
Yes, don't we?
So there's a horrible story of a sturgeon that jumped into a ship in, I think it was in Florida, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. A young girl was
killed. A little girl.
Yeah.
How big could a fish like that be to do that?
Well, it depends on how it struck. I mean, sturgeons can get really huge. They're a prehistoric fish.
I mean, they don't bite, do they? They just hit?
Well, the alligator gars would, but the sturgeon, not likely. Although they do look somewhat similar, but it would have to have been a fairly decent sized fish. I mean, not like the flying carp you're dealing with in the Midwest.
I mean, but what, 3 feet, 4 feet long?
I would think it would be about at least 2 feet, probably 4 feet long, and it, you know, I mean, it had to leap pretty good to you know, knock somebody out in a boat.
I mean, it killed a little girl, injured the mother, injured the brother. So how could it hit three people at one time?
Well, that's the size.
What a freak accident. I mean, you're out in a boat.
And that's exactly what it was, a freak accident.
I mean, my God, you're out in a boat with your little child, and the little child gets killed from a sturgeon that comes flying into the boat. What causes these fish to jump like that?
Well, sometimes just the sound of the boat motor and the boat approaching will do that to a fish. Other times they're being chased by predators, and you know, they leap to get out of the reach of the predator. So it's anybody's guess why it would have done that. And it just it's tragic that it happens, but those things do. That's just life.
Now tell me about this cryptid in Palm Beach you were talking about.
Yeah, in the long run, they were doing composites of it and everything else, and it looked like something out of a 18th century map on a mariner's map with there be monsters here. But the animal turned out to be, and of course Ed Patuk and I got hate mail coming out, you know, at the yin yang, because people just didn't want to believe what we were saying, because we said that, you know, what people were seeing was a pinniped. And it turned out that a news helicopter flying over Lake Worth actually saw the seal and filmed it. So, you know, this was like a couple of weeks after the episode aired on Monster Quest. And then about a year later, they found the manatee, which we said, you know, accounted for the tail. swimming in the outflow from the electrical plant there where it was trying to keep warm, and they actually filmed the trident tail on the manatee. So, you know, it turns out we were 100% right as to what the animal was.
Just amazing what's out there. It really is.
Yeah.
Giant
well,
catfish.
What amazes me is the number of variations that you can encounter that are mistaken for a monster or a cryptid creature of some kind.
How big is a giant catfish?
Oh, you can ask my buddy Chester Moore about that one. He swam with
it. Oh, really?
Chester, they
can get big.
Yeah, well, Chester sent me a picture of him with one, and it was at least as long as he was tall, which is a good 6 feet.
Now, how old would a catfish like that be?
I don't know if it's an age thing. It probably has something to do with age, but I don't know that that's entirely the case. But I would figure a couple of years at least. But this thing had, you know, in Chester's photo, had a maw on it that could have swallowed him whole.
Unbelievable. How did he even pull the thing in?
He didn't. He was diving with it with a scuba tank.
Oh, no. He saw it that way? That's horrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
These giant alligators that are out there, how long do they get?
The largest one I've ever seen was 15 feet.
From nose to tail?
Yeah. And and this was absolutely enormous.
That's pretty big
size.
This
is a funny thing. You remember the old alligator alley down in Florida, old 41?
Yeah.
We were driving along 41 there in the Everglades, and it stopped because there was a dead gator in the road. And it had actually crossed. It was hit by a truck, a poor thing. It was almost entirely across the road from length of tail to tip of head. It had been, you know, the head had been crushed where a truck had gone over it, and part of the tail had been crushed. But there were Oriental tourists, you know, out there with their cameras taking pictures all over the place. It was kind of a surreal thing. That was the most enormous gator I've ever seen.
That could swallow a human whole, couldn't it?
I don't know about that. They tend to like, they don't like fresh meat. They like to take it and tuck it under a log and let it rot and then rip pieces off with their death roll. It could definitely have done some damage, let's put it that way.
What about an anaconda snake?
Yeah, well, we get plenty of those.
They get big,
People
too,
didn't believe
don't
it
they?
A few years ago. But we've got loads of those down in the Everglades now. And what's getting me concerned is there are other types of snakes down there that are probably even more potentially deadly.
Oh, boy. And how big? How big do they get?
Well, let's put it this way. A friend of mine who owns a facility there that is well known to the viewers of Animal 911 on Discovery Channel, his herpetologist has pulled two king cobras out of the Everglades.
Ah, that's scary.
Yes,
that's scary.
Very scary.
All right, Scott, stick with us. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take phone calls as we talk about cryptid creatures all over the place, actually. So check in with us. I'm going to talk with them a little bit more about Bigfoot now when we come back. Seems to be the hot topic these days. People desperately want to get the answers to what Bigfoot might be. If you need to email me, send me all kinds of notes at george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. Calls next on Coast to Coast AM.